Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. 30 years ago, the world heard the name Srebrenica. During the Bosnian War, this town became the site of a massacre that is officially recognized as modern genocide. According to the United Nations, at least 8,300 Muslim men and teen boys were killed or went missing at the hands of Serbian military forces. The mass killing was part of a larger, terrible war that took 100,000 lives. It was also part of the reason that thousands of Bosnians left their homeland to flee that genocide. Many came here to St. Louis, and they're seeking refuge, and rebuilding their lives here is another side of the 1995 tragedy, because here Bosnians have flourished, and our region has been changed by and with them. So 3 decades later, St. Louis and its Bosnian community are commemorating the Srebrenica genocide and the people who were lost to it. To talk about this anniversary and the events this summer to do so, I'm joined by 3 organizers of the Srebrenica Remembrance Coalition. Adna Karamejc-Oates, she is the director of the Center for Bosnian Studies, Nedim Ramic, who is a local attorney, and Elvir Akmitovic, who is a survivor of the Srebrenica massacre and today is a St. Louis public school teacher. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Now, you all started planning events for this 30-year milestone anniversary 2 years ago. What discussions did you have with one another about how to honor this anniversary? Nedim, let's start with you.
Sure. So a couple of years ago, so what happened, individuals and organizations starting coming together to discuss how best to commemorate 30 years since the genocide. In the past, we had done marches on a local level in the Bevo Mill neighborhood and in the local community, mostly Bosnians. So this time we really wanted to go a little bit bigger, create more events, and then have it all culminate with the march on July 12th in downtown St. Louis. Initially our goal was to have it hosted under the arch and on the arch grounds, but due to some logistical challenges, we scaled back and we'll hold the event at the Soldiers Memorial Military Museum. So. Mm-hmm.
The plans for the 30th anniversary, you mentioned all of the elements, and it was 2 years in planning stages. I mean, were people already thinking about it before you all got together and started talking? How much of that was also based on what was done in the previous milestone anniversary with 25 years, for example, Adna?
So we have been meeting, I would say, since we started first talking about this 2 years ago on a regular basis and bringing in different organizations to participate in this effort, because we have community organizations, but we also have St. Louis organizations that really share, I think, many of the mission that we are trying to sort of carry forward here. Mm-hmm. The Missouri Historical Society, for instance, the St. Louis Feldman Kaplan Holocaust Museum, and the St. Louis Mosaic Project. So bringing in different partners, what could they do and what were they willing sort of to organize around this commemoration? Mm-hmm. So we have, Nedim mentioned the July 12th walk, which is similar. The walk is something that we have done in the past, but the series of events now are really very much sort of in the lead up to that July 12th. Mm-hmm. So in April, the Holocaust Museum held an event around why memory matters, for instance. Just last Monday, we had a huge crowd at the St. Louis County Library, the Clark Family Branch, where the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra performed something called Bosnian Journeys, which is a concert, but it's interspersed with oral history recordings from the Center of Bosnian Studies of survivors mm-hmm. and Bosnian immigrants to St. Louis.
Right.
And there's other events planned. And I would just mention, we have a website, neverforgetsrebrenica.org, where all of this is listed. And I would encourage your listeners to look at that website and mm-hmm. See, you know, where they could join us for these commemorations.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we will put a link to that website attached to the web story that comes out after our conversation. Now, speaking of personal accounts, you know, storytelling can be very powerful. Elvira, you teach middle school students, and when you are about the age of some of those students at age 11, you saw the war starting, and you experienced some profoundly painful things. Your four-year-old sister, grandfather, and uncle were all killed, and your mother was seriously wounded by an artillery shell that took your sister's life. Elvira, can you tell us a bit about how the start of the war felt to you as an 11-year-old, and how it was that you came to be near Srebrenica?
It came as a complete shock to me. I lived in a small, quaint village near Srebrenica. Pretty much a careless childhood. All the cares in the world I had is about my grades. Mm-hmm. I played a lot with my neighbors, with peers in my school and so on. So when the war came to our village, to our little village, it was a complete shock. I did not fully comprehend at first what was going on. My parents, of course, did, and our neighbors did. But very soon I realized the gravity of the whole situation in which we found ourselves, especially after we had to flee our little village and go into a different one, more remote one, where we could hide from the Serb forces, literally run for our lives. Mm-hmm. So, and then very soon after we fled our village, we fled, I think it was May of 1992. And then once we settled in that other village in August, I had that horrible tragedy where my sister was lost, when she was killed by a tank grenade fired from the Serb positions. So that completely changed my life right in a blink of an eye.
Yeah. Now, you were with us, Elvira, because you escaped the massacre in Srebrenica. And there was a moment when your family was being separated by Serbian soldiers, with men and boys being put into trucks and sent away. At that time, you were 14. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about how it came to that point and what it is that happened there.
Yeah, that was in July of 1995. We all gathered at Potočari. This is one little place right at the entrance to the town of Srebrenica. And that's where all the civilians gathered in the hope of being transported to territory of Tuzla, which is a town under the control of the Bosnian government at that time. So thousands and thousands of people gathered there, desperately hoping to get out alive. So when we reached the truck, me and my family, my mother, my sister, and my grandmother, our grandfather stayed behind because he was just too scared to follow us. So when we get to the truck and when the soldiers started, when they told us to get on the trucks, one of the soldiers came up to me because I was a little tallish. I was a tallish boy at the time. Mm-hmm. So he came up to me and said, told me to get on the truck. At first, I thought he was separating me from the crowd because that's what was happening, actually, at the moment. Mm-hmm. They were separating boys, 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old boys from their families and executing them or taking them to places of executions. So I thought that was my fate as well. But luckily, he told me just to get on the truck to help women and children get on the truck and put their luggage on. At that point, I did not fully understand what was going on. But my mom was mortified when she saw him telling me to come over to him and giving me those instructions. But only later it set in with me what had transpired and what could have transpired But I was lucky, and the man was just doing his job. He was a good-hearted soldier, so who just really wanted to help us.
Yeah. Does distance from what happened then give you any more clarity about why that happened the way that it did?
That particular moment?
Yeah.
I think I was just lucky, really, that that person was not a malicious person. But I've heard stories of similar situations where they did separate boys mm-hmm. of my age or maybe a little older, 15, 16 years old boys, where they did separate them from their families and they were never to be seen again. Mm-hmm. So I think it was just pure luck for me. And we do have to, I need to emphasize this, that not all of the soldiers at Srebrenica, Serb soldiers at Srebrenica, committed crimes. Some of them were there following the orders. Some of them are just fulfilling the orders that, for example, that soldier was, he had in his job was to basically just to put us on the trucks, and that's what he did. Mm-hmm. But not all of them behaved in that way, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
Anna and Nedim, as you hear Elvira talk about his experience, what are some of the feelings or thoughts that come up for you, Nedim?
I mean, anybody that hears stories like Elvira's, it leaves a lasting impression on your heart, on your soul. You start thinking, like, how can humanity be as cruel as they really are? But again, we've got to keep in mind, as you mentioned, Elaine, previously, that the Bosnian Serb forces deported more than 25,000 women and children and killed more than 8,000 Bosniak Muslim men. And as you mentioned, it was ruled a genocide in two international courts, crimes committed in Srebrenica in July of 95. And what these events that we are trying to commemorate here in St. Louis these days are trying to do is what we've seen since the since July of 95 is a concentrated effort by the perpetrators of this genocide in trying to rewrite history and denying, mitigating and whitewashing what really happened. So I feel, after hearing stories like Elvira's, that it is our duty to preserve those memories. It is our responsibility to speak on behalf of those that were killed. They don't have a voice these days, so mm-hmm. it is our responsibility to keep that memory alive.
Adna, neither you nor Nedim were personally at Srebrenica. Hearing Elvira's story, many other stories you've heard, preservation that is happening through storytelling, how is it that you came to learn about what happened in July of 1995? And what did that event mean to your family?
You know, I listen to Elvira and I look at Elvira, and I think we have to remember, coming back to St. Louis, most people in St. Louis have either met a Bosnian so far or will meet a Bosnian, because the population is so large right now mm-hmm. that it's just a fact of numbers. So when you look at Elvira, you would never know that he has this story behind him. But I think then it's important to remember that because most of the population, Bosnian population in St. Louis, is here because they are from areas that were brutally attacked, the Bosnian Muslim population ethnically cleansed from those areas, that they're here because of that, and that they carry those stories, that most people have trauma, that most people have lost someone in their family. So we have to remember that. And as Nedim was saying, that's why we also need to record those stories and preserve those stories and remember as a community, not just the Bosnian community, but as the St. Louis community, of which the Bosnian community has really become a critical part. Mm-hmm. And for me, listening to Elvira, I mean, I do this for the Oral History Project for the Center for Bosnian Studies. It it always impacts me to listen to a personal story. It's, you know, you never get used to it. And I am trying to teach my children about what happened, you know, and not shield them from these horrors, but make them understand that this happened in our world, in our time, in my time, and that they have to also remember as Bosnians.
We need to take a quick break here, but we will be back shortly to continue this conversation about local commemoration of the 30th anniversary of the genocide in the Bosnian town of Srebrenica. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Parrott Corporation, a contractor with over four decades of shaping the St. Louis landscape. More at Parrott.com.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation about the 30th anniversary of the genocide in Srebrenica. Tens of thousands of Bosnians fled the war in the 1990s and rebuilt their lives here in St. Louis. I'm here with three organizers of the Srebrenica Remembrance Coalition, director of the Center of Bosnian Studies, Adna Karamejic-Oates, attorney Nedim Ramic, and Elvir Akmitovic, a survivor of the Srebrenica massacre. Now, before the break, Elvir, you shared with us your experience of surviving that genocide, the loss of your sister and family members. And I understand that you talk with your middle school students about your experience. What are the questions that they ask you? And has the way that you've answered those questions changed at all over time?
Yeah, I do talk to my students about my personal experiences as much as I can when I can tie it into a lesson that I'm teaching. And they are surprised because they hear about these things, genocide, massacres, ethnic cleansing. Maybe they hear it on TV, on the news, in books, but they never actually, most of them have never met a person who had experienced those things. So I do teach them about it. I educate them about what genocide is, how it personally affected me. And their questions are usually, but why it happened? You Bosnians are all the same skin color. What is the reason for the persecution and so on? So then I have to go a little bit deeper, talk about religion. My family and people around me were killed just because they bore a Muslim name. That's right. Pretty much it. Nothing else. Mm-hmm. We look the same. We talk the same. We speak the same language. But it still happened. So they are a little bit taken aback when I tell them that. So it's a really useful lesson for them, for my students, to have a deeper understanding of these events and just the concept of genocide and persecutions that are happening, unfortunately, all around the world at any moment.
Mm-hmm. And I think for some context, knowing that you teach in the Normandy school district, so these questions about your skin is the same color, I think it's important to understand that is a very specific to St. Louis kind of set of circumstances or setting. You were also, you're speaking and sharing your story. You've done that over the years. And at an April event that was held at the St. Louis Holocaust Museum, Anna, you'd mentioned the Holocaust Museum as one of the partners. What was that experience like for you? I mean, was there a range of ages among the people who were in the crowd there?
Yes. They were all ages present, from children to octogenarians, older people, so a whole spectrum of people who attended the event. Mm-hmm. My role was to provide a testimony, my personal testimony at the event, and another guest was David Pettigrew. He's the professor at the Southern Connecticut State University. He's very involved in researching Bosnian genocide, fighting the culture of denialism that is present in Republika Srpska and Serbia at this moment. So I'm really grateful for him to participating in the event as well and providing his perspective on these events. Mm-hmm. But it was a great event. It was an opportunity for us to teach and educate people about Bosnian genocide and the massacre. And it also was a learning experience for us because we need to, as a Bosnian community, although we have done a lot, teaching, spreading the word about what had happened, but I think we can still learn a lot from Jewish community, the ways that they honored the victims of the Holocaust with educational institutions, museums, oral testimonies, something like what Adna is already doing. So it was, I think, opportunity for us to educate, but also a learning experience, at least for me personally.
Mm-hmm. Nadim, were you there by any chance?
On the April event?
Yeah.
I mean, listening to Elvire, we have got to keep in mind that Elvire is one of so many other people that have gone through similar events in their lives. And having children of my own now, a 9-year-old and a 3-year-old, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around the fact that those people remained mentally intact throughout the whole ordeal and after the fact. There has got to be trauma there that, and Adna will know better than I do. I mean, my wife was 4 or 5 years old. She was in Srebrenica during the time period. My mother-in-law, she lost her brother on the march. And unfortunately, a lot of them are not ready, willing, and able to come out and talk about those horrible experiences that they have gone through. However, I think it is so important, like Elvire is doing, to tell those stories, to let the world know what happened and to commemorate that.
Mm-hmm. And creating ways for people to do so, Adna, you have been part of an effort to collect the histories of the people who survived the war in Bosnia 30 years ago and the genocide there. We have some of these accounts recorded for the Bosnian Memory Project. These selections were played for the public in April at an event with the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. Some described memories of their lives before the war. Zeniga was around 16 when the conflict began in 1992.
Everyone had Serbian friends and every Serb friends, and everyone had Muslim friends. There was no differentiating. You know, young, old, it didn't matter. Everyone was mixed completely. And that's the main reason why I believe everyone thought that was unspeakable. Nothing was going to happen. Our neighbors were going to look out for us. They would never hurt us.
Is that something that you can relate with?
Yes. Yes, very much so. Mm-hmm. In our little village, it was a Muslim village, but the village right next to us was a Serb village, where Orthodox people lived. And we went to the same school, little school that was maybe a few kilometers away. Mm-hmm. We were friends. We played together. We joked together. My parents went to work with their parents. It was a harmonious community, and is just mind-boggling to see how that little community was transformed in no time from a very peaceful, quaint village, quaint region into a scene of massacres and mass deportations and ethnic cleansing. Even for me as a child, who did not fully comprehend the gravity of all that was happening around me. It was shocking. But for my parents, who just refused to believe that something would happen in their village, it was even a greater shock, I would say.
Yeah. The word commemoration, I will say from a personal point of view, commemoration is a word that has always struck me as strange. Is it positive in connotation? Is it about stirring up for many people traumas that they're trying to they're trying to figure out how to live with or maybe live past. And this commemoration, 30-year commemoration, is about a genocide. Now, are there ways that you are recognizing what life in Bosnia was like before the war? Is there some inclusion of that, or is that for like a different space and one that is not that's not recognized in a set of events like this, but in more everyday kinds of settings? Adna?
I think this event, the commemoration, is really a moment of collective remembering as a community, right? And we need that moment because this was a marking moment, I think, in the history of our community, right? There's not a Bosnian that doesn't feel this deeply, right? So I think in commemorating, we're also commemorating the life before, because as Elvir was saying, this was not, you know, we did not grow up like this, mm-hmm. right? We never thought that something like this would happen. So I think in commemorating the genocide, we're also sort of remembering the tragedy of the life, the multi-ethnic life that we lost, mm-hmm. And that we did really truly have in Bosnia before all of this.
One of the remembrances that were recorded through this Bosnia Memory Project came from Mirna. She was only a few years old during the genocide, kind of to get to the point that, Nedim, you were talking about, the ages at which people, you know, were there. And Mirna said that she thinks about what could have been had there not been war, and her family had stayed in their home in Sarajevo. Do you think about that question ever, Elvir? You know, what if there was no war?
I do. Quite often, actually. What if there was no war? Where would I be now? How would my life trajectory go? What would my life trajectory be? Those are the ifs. As much as I am often thinking about those alternate possibilities of my life, I need to focus on what had happened and my life trajectory after the events of the 1995 and the entire war, as a matter of fact. So. Yes, I do, but I focus on present and future and teaching about the past.
Mm-hmm. You all had mentioned the final event in this, you know, 30-year commemoration of the Srebrenica massacre, and it will include a walk on July 12th in downtown St. Louis. There have been walks in the past in the Bevo Mill neighborhood. Is there something in particular that you will be encouraging people to do during that walk, and you know, how long is it, Nadine?
The walk is going to be about a mile, mm-hmm. and we're going to go down Market and then come back to Soldiers Memorial. But encouraging people to really show up, to join us. We invite everybody, individuals, organizations, communities, to stand with us in remembrance and advocacy. Come meet us, talk to us, get to know your neighbors, because as we just discussed, you may know a Bosnian, but maybe you just have no idea what we have gone through.
Mm-hmm. Will this be different this time, this walk, Adna, because it is a milestone anniversary?
I think it will be different. I'm really grateful that we have been able to pull together this coalition, that it really has demonstrated the support that the Bosnian community has in St. Louis from all different sets of expertise. And I think that's what makes it different, that, you know, everybody is coming together for this one. We are honoring it in a really honorable way, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And the last question for you, Elvir, is there something that you hope people will do beyond remembering, which sometimes feels like a very passive thing, a quiet thing?
I think we need to be proactive. I know it sounds like a cliche saying, we hope it never happens. These tragedies that we had experienced that no one else does. But being proactive, teaching about these events, teaching about our personal experiences, educating not just people within Bosnian community, but people around the world, people in St. Louis, mm-hmm. as Nedi mentioned, they may know a Bosnian, but they don't know his background.
Right.
So again, going to the point of teaching and educating, because if we don't do that, the perpetrators will. They will step in and they will push their narrative, their revisionist narrative, telling us who had experienced that, who were the victims, what had happened. And that false narrative is being pushed more and more, especially now, which is a little, it's a sad fact, but I feel that it is more urgent now to talk about the Srebrenica genocide 30 years later than it was 10 years in 2005 or 2010. Mm-hmm. Those forces are really striving to change the narrative and change the picture of what had actually happened in Srebrenica. And we need to do our job. It is our moral imperative to teach about what happened and own the truth, not let them own the narrative.
And I think, Elaine, in particular in this day and age, when we have got a lot of division, not just within this country, but also worldwide and the world events and events in the United States, the mission of this event is to inspire action against hate and intolerance. And that's why it's also important that we have got our member organizations that are helping us, in particular the St. Louis Holocaust Museum, and their mission is as well through the lessons to inspire all people to confront hatred, to promote human dignity, and again prevent something like this ever happening again.
Nedim Ramic is a local attorney. Elvir Akmirovic is a survivor of the Srebrenica massacre and a St. Louis public school teacher. And Adna Karamejic-Oates is the director of the Center for Bosnian Studies. Thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Elaine.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.